And we're back. Well, tax season's here, folks, and you know...
Hi there.
Whoa, where'd you come from?
April here to tell you about the tax filing software from TaxAct.
Seriously, were you like hiding behind my desk?
Seriously, TaxAct makes it easy to get your maximum refund.
Well, you heard it here first, folks.
Switch to TaxAct today and you can start for free.
Or as we say at Radioland...
Subtle. TaxAct. TaxAct. File for less and get more.
See TaxAct.com for details.
Surgeons keep our hearts beating. They do the amazing. Help save lives, and so can you. Your CSL plasma donation can help create 24 critical life-saving medicines that can give Grandpa the chance for his heart to swell when he meets his new grandson, or give a bride the chance for her heart to skip a beat on her wedding day. Every plasma donation helps more than you know. Do the amazing. Help save lives. Donate today at your local CSL plasma center and be rewarded for your generosity.
Alrighty, hour number two of our radio program. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. So I will say, as you do have two NBA games, then the first one will tip off tonight of the game twos coming up at 7:30, and then tonight at 10 p.m. you do have the Kings and the Warriors, 10 p.m. Eastern time, that is. From all the game ones, Hickey, I think the takeaway is actually the injuries that we've seen. Because I don't think series usually end in game one. Like any Tom, Dick, and Harry after one game could get on the radio and say, all righty, this team won, and the series is over. It happens every year, and I'm sure there is at least one team in particular where I do think their series is over that did lose over the weekend that we will get to in just a second. But when you look at the big takeaways, it's the injuries and what players are going to be able to play that got hurt over the weekend and who aren't, that can drastically impact the changes, the chances that this team has of coming back from down 0-1 in a series or continuing their lead in their series for a team that won that suffered an injury as well. And the three injuries that we had, Giannis Antetokounmpo has a back injury. The MRI came back clean. I think there's optimism that he's going to play for game number two with the Bucks dropping game number one yesterday at Fiserv Forum where they did lose to the Miami Heat. So I don't think that is something of great concern in terms of Giannis missing game two, but it is something to monitor throughout the rest of this series and throughout the rest of the postseason because it is, whether you think he's the MVP or not, he's the preeminent player in the sport right now. I think Giannis, even though Embiid will win the MVP, Giannis Antetokounmpo is the best player in the NBA. And they had to deal with injuries, especially with him, even when they won that championship. If you go back to that Eastern Conference final up against Atlanta when everyone thought Giannis' season was over. And then you look at last year, there's a very good chance that they would have repeated or bare minimum got back to the NBA finals if it wasn't for the closer Chris Middleton injury up against Boston. So the Giannis injury, I would say the best way to say it now is they avoided the big scare, but you still have to be scared if you're a Bucks fan because you wonder how much of a lingering problem is this back injury. It's good the MRI came back clean, is going to impact him throughout the rest of the postseason, or if you land on it awkwardly again, what else happens? So that's the Giannis side of it. Now, also in that series, you did have Tyler Hero of the Heat break his right hand. And he's going to be out bare minimum 4 to 6 weeks. So he's donezo maybe for the entire playoffs because I don't think anyone actually thinks the Heat are still going to be playing 4 to 6 weeks from now. Actually, you never know how long these series do take to wrap up. But Hickey, I don't know about you. It's definitely not the way that you want game one to happen. And I know Miami has the experience. And Miami, we all know how great Jimmy Butler is. And Miami, even though they have not been playing like it, they have the capability of going on a run. Until I see it end differently, I'm going to assume that the Bucks not only come back, but they end up winning this series. And we see how many times the Bucks lose game ones. And remember, it wasn't that long ago. It was 2 years ago where they were down 0-2 in the NBA Finals. They ended up winning it in the Bucks and six chant.
Right. There's so much championship metal on this team where they're not panicking after a one-game loss. It looks like Giannis should be back for game two. I mean, he landed on his tailbone. It hurts really, really bad, but it's not one of those where you should be, at least from what we heard so far, nervous that he could miss significant time in terms of weeks. So even if he's not ready for game two, you should expect him back game three, but it looks like game two is going to be a go for him. So he's getting healthier. Chris Middleton played really well. Even if he can't play, you still, I mean, the Bucks will have a game plan, obviously, for, you know, for this team playing without Giannis. They're still a really good team without Giannis. So I'm with you. No real concern, even with dropping game one and Giannis is right now uncertainty for game two. No real concern with the Bucks losing this series.
Here's what I would say about Giannis. I don't think there's any doubt in my mind that he's going to at least play in game two. It's going to be, is he going to be able to make it through the entire game? And how long is he going to make it through the entire game? And is there any chance of maybe him being on a minutes restriction where they're guiding those minutes as well? But there's no doubt in my mind that he isn't going to play. Like, I think he's going to play in the game. And remember, that game too, game one was yesterday. They don't play tonight. They don't play tomorrow. They don't play until Wednesday. So we don't see him back on the court, Hickey, for game two until Wednesday. I think he's going to play. You're just going to monitor, A, how effective he's going to be, and then, B, how long he's going to be able to make it through the entire game.
Right, and again, you should feel pretty confident that he'll be, if he's out there playing, should be able to play a good amount of time and hopefully no limitations.
Okay, now let's get to the one series that I think it's over. Ja Morant with the hand injury. And Ja Morant sounded devastated after the game. I would be shocked if he plays in game number two. I don't know if he'll end up playing again the rest of the series. Like, I'm not ready to go to that level and say that he's going to be out for the rest of the series. But Hickey, usually when it comes to injuries, teams kind of keep it close to the vest. And you don't really get that much reaction from players. The way that you heard Ja Morant, who's clearly going through things, and it's been documented, you know, obviously with him missing time away from the team and there's things going on, but very emotional, and he sounded like he knows that even if he's going to be able to return at some point in this series, there's not much that he's going to be able to do to contribute to the team. Once again, these series are so long, so who knows how things navigate from this week to next week. But in terms of Wednesday, Lakers and Grizzlies game number two, I would be very surprised, Hickey, if we end up seeing Ja Morant on that basketball court.
It does. Now, you get a long break, but yes, I would agree. It does not seem like this is an injury where it looks like he's going to play. And the fact that it's already doubtful, still 48 hours before a playoff game even begins, that also underscores the severity of if he's already doubtful and leaning towards not playing on Wednesday. Well, then you think game three on Saturday, even though you, by that point, have a week off in between games if he doesn't play on Wednesday in game two, it's hard to even believe that he'll either play or be effective if that hand injury is really going to give him that big of a deal, which on his right hand, shooting hand, it should.
And clearly, I hope that he's going to play. And you don't want to see a series get impacted this way. But I'll tell you this. I'm not rooting for the Grizzlies in this series. Like, heading into the series, I had no dog in the fight. We know how much smack Memphis does talk, and I think that's good for the sport. And we've seen them go after the Warriors a lot and other teams as well. When you're talking that much smack and you do have this confidence about you, which I do think you need a lot of that in sports, and I don't believe that players get to the level of elite of being elite athletes without that bravado and that confidence. But it makes you almost want to root for the Lakers. And seeing how confident the Grizzlies were going into this series and then the way that the Lakers played down the stretch the other day, that was a bad look. And I know they suffered the jaw injury as well, but that was a bad look for the Memphis Grizzlies yesterday.
Especially when you look at who was the difference makers. Like, it wasn't, if you could tell LeBron James had 45 points and even at 38, LeBron still got a little left in the tank where he could just put an entire team on his shoulders and take over a game, okay. Anthony Davis lights up the you know, the court and is unstoppable. He should be and is the best player in the series. Okay, it happens. To get cooked by Rui Hachimura and Austin Reeves in the second half and have no answer for either of them, can't allow it to happen.
And you know, at least one or two games in this series, LeBron is going to find a way to win a game or two just based off of still, even though LeBron has had injuries of his own, and you saw Anthony Davis for a little bit give you a scare too, which I feel like is just a regular occurrence, you do know that eventually, at some point in this series, LeBron is just going to be the best player on the court, and LeBron on his own is going to be able to win you one or two games just on his own in this series. Like, I hate to say it after one game, Hickey, but when you factor in the Morant injury and the uncertainty there and the Lakers being up 1-0 and LeBron, who was good, you know, in the game, you know, he had 21 points, you know, he gives you 11 rebounds, but LeBron not playing his LeBron way yet, and you know that's coming for at least one or two games in this series where they'll win. I think the Lakers are going to beat Memphis. I thought going in this was going to be a seven-game series. I thought it was going to be a toss-up. And I've said from the start, I think at best, the Lakers, you can only trust them to get through one round to the playoffs. I do now fully expect the Lakers to win the series.
I'm still not ready to go there yet. I'm not jumping off the ship just yet. It's not looking good, but I'll give Memphis, even without John Morant. No, I do not. Not at all.
Like,
not at all.
Like, let me ask you right now. You go through all these series and where we were before the start of the playoffs. If I gave you one freebie in terms of you get to change one prediction, right, for Sixers and Nets, I'm assuming you took Philadelphia, right?
Yes, sir.
You're not changing that?
No, I will stay with the Sixers.
Yeah, especially after game one. Golden State, Sacramento, where were you at?
Kings.
Where are you? I'm assuming you're keeping that at 1-0.
Yes, sir.
Boston, Atlanta, I'm assuming that you took Boston.
Celtics, not changing.
You're not changing. New York, Cleveland, who'd you ride with?
Knicks. Knicks and six, rhymes off the tongue, so far so good.
And they're up 1-0. Clippers and Suns, who'd you go with?
I took the Suns.
Now, LA did take the victory last night. I would agree with that. Miami, Milwaukee, where'd you go with?
Bucks, and I will still stick with the Bucks.
Denver, Minnesota.
I took the Nuggets, and I will not get off that after the nice 30-point win.
So then the one series that we did not talk about is the one that we're talking about now, Lakers and Memphis. You went with Memphis before the series.
Yes, sir.
You changing that now?
No.
You sure?
Yes.
Even if I give you that one get-out-of-jail-free card that I just gave you?
Nope. Yep, I'm sticking with the Grizz.
Yeah, you're going to be wrong on that. I love you, but you're going to be wrong on that because I know this team has had to play without Ja Morant before this year, but I think they are biting off more than they could chew with the hype around this team, and you still got LeBron, and for now, I know he had a little bit of a scare yesterday. Anthony Davis is healthy, and the Lakers like won a game against Memphis going away down the stretch where they didn't play their best game of basketball. So I kind of look at the Lakers as they're going to be advancing to round number two. Now, we'll see if they end up getting the Warriors because, you know, the league would absolutely love that. But you look at this kind of feel through the first games, and then we'll have two more games tonight. The Lakers, I think, are the big winners from over the weekend. I really do believe that. Now, let's also get into probably, once you get past the injuries, the other biggest takeaway. I've never seen anything like what Russell Westbrook did up against the Clippers, up against the Suns. Like, full disclosure, I thought that the Suns were going to sweep the Clippers. Now, I thought they'd win in four. I said, okay, it's tough to still sweep in the NBA because, like, not everyone gives it their all, even in the playoffs or each and every game. So maybe it's a gentleman's sweep. But I thought this series would be over in four or five games. I still do think, and I confidently think, that the Suns are going to win this series. But last night, when you come back, and then the Clippers are trying to give you every chance for the Suns to win the game, and you have that stretch where Russell Westbrook is making these great hustle plays, but he's not hitting the shot, and they're not capitalizing. You know, there was a stretch where he grabbed an offensive rebound, made the hustle play to get the ball to go off DeAndre Ayton, then he misses a three, and then he makes two free throws. And at the end of the game, he makes the block, and as the ball's about to go out of bounds, he taps it to go off Booker. For a guy, what was he, like 3 of 19 in the game? for his stat line to look that bad, he's still the talk of that series. He really is. It's kind of crazy. And I know Kawhi was phenomenal, but to see Russell Westbrook, if you just look at the stat sheet, go 3 of 19 from the field, 1 of 6 from 3, and have 9 points. And remember, Paul George isn't expected to play. If I would have told you that before the game last night, you would have said, how many points did the Clippers lose by? They ended up winning by 5 because Russell Westbrook had 11 rebounds. He had such a high motor and made so many athletic plays, also looked so ugly shooting the ball throughout the entire game. I know Kawhi had the best statistical night, but in terms of impact at the end, Hickey, Russell Westbrook, to me, was the biggest reason why they won the game in the last few moments with the plays that he made. It was crazy.
Best 3 of 19 performance you'll ever see in NBA history. It's also a lucky number. Give the ESPN stats and credit, stats and info their credit. Second time Russell Westbrook has gone 3 of 19 in the playoffs. His team's 2-0. So really? I don't know what it is. I don't know what the hell it is when this guy is missing 16 shots in the playoffs, but his team's managed to win. And look, obviously, you needed Kawhi Leonard's 38 points because without Russell Westbrook, you know, with him throwing a brick after brick after brick, you need someone to score. But you're right. Impact, getting rebounds, getting 2 offensive rebounds late in that final minute to keep possession on the Clippers' end, not allow the Suns to get an opportunity down by 1 to take the lead or tie the game, drawing the foul, hitting 2 foul shots as not really a great free throw shooter, and massive pressure to extend the lead to 3.
I thought he was going 50% there.
He was tremendous.
I thought he was
going
to split.
You got to give him a lot of credit. He, again, was super impactful and truly showed you don't have to score in order to impact a game, and he personified that perfectly yesterday.
Is it safe to say that after what you've seen in game 1, there's no team under more pressure than the Suns? Do you agree with that statement?
Yes, because I think the Grizzlies get a little bit of a break with the Ja injury.
I would even say before the Ja injury, there's more pressure on the Suns. Because the Suns 2 years ago got to the finals. They blew that 2-0 lead to the Bucks. Last year was a disaster with their performance or lack of it up against the Dallas Mavericks in that deciding game. But now you add KD. And I don't care that heading into this one, KD only had 8 games with his teammates. You have KD. You have Chris Paul. You have Booker. I know DeAndre Ayton. I don't know what the heck he was doing when you let Russell Westbrook keep on out-rebounding you. But you got a team that has no excuses. I don't want to hear that they haven't had enough games together. And you have a Western Conference that's not that strong. There's no team under more pressure this postseason than the Phoenix Suns to get out of the West to get to the NBA Finals once again. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports.
Surgeons keep our hearts beating. They do the amazing, help save lives, and so can you. Your CSL plasma donation can help create 24 critical life-saving medicines that can give Grandpa the chance for his heart to swell when he meets his new grandson, or give a bride the chance for her heart to skip a beat on her wedding day. Every plasma donation helps more than you know. Do the amazing. Help save lives. Donate today at your local CSL plasma center and be rewarded for your generosity.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
Welcome back in, Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio, gearing up for the NFL Draft. We will have 3 NFL Draft shows emanating from Kansas City next week. On Wednesday, normal Zach Gelb Show from 6 to 10 p.m. Eastern. We'll have special draft coverage with myself, JR, and also Andrew Perloff on Thursday night. And then it will be myself and JR on Friday. So we're excited to get to Kansas City, and now joining us is a member who is hoping to hear his name called and hopefully doesn't have to wait that long. That is Carrington Valentine from the Kentucky Wildcats, who's a cornerback and getting set for the draft. And Carrington joins us right now. Carrington, first off, Zach Gelb here on CBS Sports Radio. Appreciate the time. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
All righty. So now we are pretty much almost a week away from the NFL draft. Just what emotions you're experiencing when you've done everything you can, but now it's all out of your control?
you know, it's, you just got to let the chips, you know, fall where, you know, where they stand. And I was a little anxious that, you know, at first, you know, you just a little, you know, as you're not too close to it, so you're not really thinking about it, you're just working out everything. But as you get, you know, closer to the day, you get a little, you know, a little butterflies in your stomach because you just, you don't know.
How do you look back at this draft process? Because it's always an interesting one to me, because you've showed what you could do on the field, but then it feels like there's more value put in these last 2-3 months gearing up to the draft.
You know, I just feel like, you know, just going out there, you know, like I said, you know, just going out there, you know, you know your value and stuff like that. You know, you just got to stay positive about it, you know, at the end of the day and stuff like that. So, you know, just have confidence in yourself, you know, throughout the process was my thing, you know, just going out there and then just showing everybody, you know, that I belong.
Carrington Valentine here with us. So you could have gone back to Kentucky. Why did you think it was the right time to embark on this NFL journey?
You know, I talked to like my family members and my coaches and stuff like that. You know, I got the feedback and, you know, I just felt like, you know, I was ready to cover some of the best receivers in the world and then go out there and compete, you know. So I just felt like, you know, that just wasn't in college. And, you know, I say that humbly. And, you know, I just, you know, you're not seeing, you know, when you go out there, you know, not everyone is like an NFL receiver. And I feel like, you know, you go out there and now you're in the National Football League and, you know, you're going to see the, like the greats out there, you know, playing and stuff like that and people who are still making a name for themselves. So just that was kind of my deciding factor, the come out.
Carrington Valentine here with us, defensive back out of Kentucky. We'll find out when he gets his name called coming up later on next week for the NFL draft. If someone asks you, what do you bring to an NFL team and what type of player can you be? What's your response?
Someone who's durable. You know, I say that very proudly. You know, I've never missed a practice in my career, and you never missed a game. And, you know, a press man corner who's locked down. You know, I feel like I go out there, and that's what works for me. And I go out there. It's not many people that can say, you know, they go out there and they fight at the line of scrimmage and keep good technique. And I feel like I do both. You know, so just going out there, you know, it's a street fight when it comes to me. And I feel like, you know, I always end up winning the street fight at the end of the day. So I feel like, you know, just going out there, someone who's smart, you know, who's willing to learn. I'm young. I'm 21 years old, so, you know, I feel like I have a lot of upside as well.
Do you have a few teams that you think have been displaying the most interest to you throughout this process?
You know, I have a couple. So, you know, just I have a couple, like the New York Jets, you know, the Raiders, and even, you know, because I'm from Cincinnati, the hometown team, so the Bengals. So just, you know, just a couple. I've had a couple more, but, yeah.
What would that be like? I know you're going to be excited wherever you get drafted, but if you're able to go play for your hometown team, that would be pretty neat.
Yeah, I feel like it'd be great, you know, just, you know, why not stay in the jungle of Cincinnati where you were born and raised? So I feel like it'd be, you know, an honor to go home and play for, you know, in front of, you know, all the people that you've seen you grow up and everything. So even the fans. So I just feel like it'd be a nice one.
Carrington Valentine here with us. Growing up, what type of football fan were you? Like, who were some players that you really gravitate towards and tried to not necessarily study it at a young age, but guys that you were a fan of?
Well, I was a receiver before I was a corner. So, you know, I watched a lot of people. So, you know, I watched, like, you know, clips of Chad Johnson, and then I watched clips of, like, Terrell Owens and everything. But, you know, when I got to high school, that's when I kind of made my switch to corner. So, you know, I kind of took bits and pieces from everybody, you know, even from, you know, watching Denzel Ward play or, you know, Jalen Ramsey or Stephon Gilmore, or, you know, just taking bits and pieces from everybody and, like, trying to see where it molds into my game.
Wrap it up with Carrington Valentine. I'm just going to give you a name. You tell me what you either learned from them or maybe we'll go into how they project to the next level. One that you learned from Mark Stoops, your former head football coach. What did you learn from him?
You know, I learned a lot. You know, he's a DB guy. You know, he trusted me at a very young age to go out there and, you know, as a freshman, even with, you know, some of the NFL talent that we had there, Kelvin Joseph and Brandon Echols, you know, he taught me, you know, some, like, my zone schemes and stuff like that. So I was a young corner, so, you know, I didn't know too much. So, you know, I learned a lot from him. So he's, you know, he really, you know, stuck his neck out for me even as a freshman. I learned the playbook pretty easily, and, you know, he's definitely a DB guy.
Carrington Valentine here with us. Will Levis, your former quarterback in Kentucky, what type of NFL quarterback do you think he'll be?
I feel like Will's going to translate really well, and, you know, I feel like he'll be ready to start day one. You know, a lot of, you know, I'm the one that knows personally. I've gone against Will for 2 years now, you know, and, you know, he's a competitor. He's a leader, you know, and he's smart. So, you know, I feel like all those things, you know, he brings to the NFL team would be great.
And last thing I'll ask you, you've gone up against both Anthony Richardson and Hendon Hooker. Their names supposed to be called, at least Anthony Richardson early, Hendon Hooker may be in the first round. How did you kind of look back at playing up against Anthony Richardson and Hendon Hooker?
You know, they're very good quarterbacks. You know, we went out there, and, you know, we didn't have the success that we wanted against Tennessee. We got the dub against Florida, you know. But, you know, I feel like, you know, just studying those guys, and those guys are going to be great in the NFL, but, you know, just studying some of the guys, you know, and, you know, just learning, you know, the tendencies and stuff like that. You know, I know Hendon had a great receiver of Cedric Tillman, you know, big body receiver and stuff like that. You know, so he gave me a little bit of challenge. But, you know, I feel like without the not the outcome you wanted, but, you know, I would say Cedric Tillman to 4 receptions, 22 yards. So, you know, I just feel like all those guys out there, you know, from Anthony Richardson to Hendon Hooker are going to be, you know, great NFL guys.
Well, Carrington, good luck. We appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
There you go. Carrington Valentine joining us, former Kentucky Wildcat cornerback. And we'll see when he does hear his name called in either day two or day three of the NFL draft. If he took the over on 5.5 you knows in each answer and his responses, I think you could collect your winnings right now. Just check with your local sports book. All righty. We'll take a timeout. We'll come on back and we will give you 10 NFL draft predictions.
Surgeons keep our hearts beating. They do the amazing, help save lives, and so can you. Your CSL plasma donation can help create 24 critical life-saving medicines that can give grandpa the chance for his heart to swell when he meets his new grandson, or give a bride the chance for her heart to skip a beat on her wedding day. Every plasma donation helps more than you know. Do the amazing. Help save lives. Donate today at your local CSL plasma center and be rewarded for your generosity.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. You can think of Riley Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts. NFL music, please. All right, Hickey. I have 10 NFL draft predictions, and these are all going to be based off the first round that will happen next Thursday, and we'll be in Kansas City. We'll do a regular Zach Gelb show in KC from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern, and then from 8 p.m. Eastern to the end of the first round, it will be yours truly, then it will be the JR Sport Brief, JR, and then also Andrew Perloff. And, of course, Hickey will be out in Kansas City with us, and he'll probably pass out after the fourth pick. That's not one of my predictions, by the way. And Stu Kovacs will be out on location as well. I also believe, well, yeah, Andrew's going to be there. So you have Maggie and Perloff doing their show before our show as well. So there's the housekeeping notes from the network. All righty, here are my 10 predictions. And you tell me if you agree or disagree with these as we go through them. Prediction number one. Bryce Young has canceled all of his other meetings. I think Bryce Young knows or feels pretty damn good that he's going to be the number one overall pick. And even if he isn't, I think it's pretty damn clear that if the Texans could pick who they wanted the Panthers to pick, the Panthers would take Stroud and then they would make sure that they would get Bryce Young because the Texans want Bryce Young. But I don't think the Texans are getting Bryce Young, because I'm feeling more and more confident by the day. I was at 50-50. Now I'm at about 70-30. that Bryce Young's going to be the number one overall pick.
I've waved the white flag on the Stroud to Carolina. 95%. It's
going
to be Bryce Young. The canceling the meetings for me was just kind of like, all right, this is happening. This is happening.
Okay, so we're not getting stubborn, Hickey. You know what? 2023, I know we're a few months past January and the start of New Year. It could be a new year, though. Because usually the old Hickey would drag his feet, stomp his feet, and cry until he was proven to be wrong.
I would not cry.
Oh, yes,
I would definitely drag and stomp my feet without a doubt.
You'd pout.
There'd be no tears.
You'd pout. You would definitely pout. So I'm going Bryce Young 1. All right. Then with that being said, the big conversation is, if Bryce Young's not there at 2, will the Texans trade? Or will the Texans not take a quarterback at 2 and go the best player on their board that is a non-quarterback? I think there's a lot of smoke here. I think the Texans would definitely want Young over Stroud. But if Young is not there, and we both expect him not to be there, I do expect C.J. Stroud to be the second overall pick in the draft. That is prediction number 2.
I will say C.J. Stroud is not a Texan.
Here we go.
He is not going to the Texans.
Okay. So if that happens on draft night, where you think the Texans make the pick, or do you think they trade?
I think they end up making a trade. I don't think they will sit there and take Will Anderson at pick number 2 when I'm sure, I know what Adam Schefter is saying, that there's all of a sudden not an appetite anymore for C.J. Stroud and anyone else. I would have a tough time believing, whether it's the Colts, maybe, I don't think the Texans would trade for him, whether it's the Titans, which maybe they won't trade with them either, the Raiders, I don't see teams looking at C.J. Stroud not going to Houston and teams saying, nah, we're good.
So let me just ask you this, and this is going to break away from the predictions for just a second on my end. My prediction so far, Young 1, Stroud 2. The Colts, in terms of their pick at 4, without telling me anything else of your predictions with the draft, you're only contemplating a chance of it happening, not that who you want, that it's going to be Stroud, Richardson, or Levis. Do you think there's a chance they don't take a quarterback?
No.
Okay.
At this point, no.
So Stroud, Richardson, Levis, right now on April 17th, give me the Hickey percentages on who will end up out of those three being the Colts quarterback. I'll give you the name C.J. Stroud. What's the percentage?
I will say 30%.
30? Ooh, that's low. Anthony Richardson.
I'll say 40%.
Okay. And then 30% then for Will Levis,
yes,
if my math is correct.
Yes, sir. I think the Colts like him.
Oh,
unless they're the only Chris Ballard does not play games. He does not seem like someone who plays a lot of poker. I don't think he usually says what he wants. The fact that right now the Colts have been not rumored at all to be trading up with anybody or making any sort of phone calls.
You're worried.
That to me seems like they are content at staying at 4.
You're
which
worried.
Means if you're content at staying at 4,
he's
you are
worried.
Content with
worried.
Will Levis sitting there and you taking him.
I'm worried.
So, yes, I am worried. My hope now is that, well, ideally, best case scenario, you get C.J. Stroud at number 4 and let's go. But that is, I would say, a low
chance. Stop bloviating for a second. Hickey, I know you well enough. These numbers of Richardson at 40%, Stroud 30%, Levis 30%. Hickey's kind of bouncing around, Will should, all that. You know that the Colts are getting Will Levis. Just say it.
No, I think there's a chance they like C.J. Stroud. I do.
But I don't think he's going to be there.
Well, that's part of it. And if the Texans are going to trade the pick and they're not going to trade it to the Colts, then you get shut out.
And not only that, even if the Texans keep the pick and they go elsewhere and it gets to 3, you know the Cardinals are going to trade, and then it's going to be whoever's trading that spot for a quarterback, so they have to like Richardson or Levis more. I don't think that's in consideration for Levis at that spot, whoever's trading to 3. So then it's basically that decision that you have to hope that a team takes Richardson over Stroud.
And then do the Colts like any of those guys more than the other where they would trade up to number 3? I think a trade up to number 3 is possible. I'm just not sold right now. If you have those 3 quarterbacks on the board, knowing you'll get one of the 2 bare minimum of Richardson, Stroud, or Levis, I don't know if they would trade up.
Well, that brings me to prediction number 3, my friend. And that is the Arizona Cardinals make a trade. And the Arizona Cardinals, with the team they trade to, I've been throwing out the Raiders, so I'll stick with the Raiders, select Anthony Richardson. And we have quarterbacks go 1, 2, and 3 in the draft. And the last time quarterbacks went 1, 2, and 3 in the draft, wasn't that Lawrence, Wilson, and Trey Lance? Now, I'll add prediction number 4, and we will see quarterbacks go, not that they should, but I think they will. 1, 2, 3, 4, Will Levis, 4th overall to the Indianapolis Colts.
This is just an observation. You sound very happy saying that.
Oh, I love
you
it.
You sounded very happy saying Will Levis to the Colts more than Bryce Young to the Panthers or C.J. Stroud to the Texans,
yeah,
or that the Raiders are going to trade up to number 3.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little extra pep in your step. Don't like that.
Well, because I know that you're going to be very unhappy and you're going to think it's going to be this horrible draft pick, and then in some weird way I'll be rooting for Will Levis to do well, so I could see you try to navigate through those.
And
loops.
Then when he wins a Super Bowl, I'm going to claim him as a Penn State. I'm going to claim him as one of our own.
Stop.
Best case scenario. Let's go. Let's go, Will.
You need help. You
Let's
need Colts
go.
Rehab. That's
Penn
what you
State's
need.
Own Will Levis, Super Bowl champion.
You know what's funny? Hickey, like a few months ago, we were talking about Will Levis. I made some joke. Oh, Penn State's Will Levis. He's like, oh, we don't claim Will Levis. And now you're claiming him.
That's right. That's right.
You need help. You really need help.
It's like Ohio State fans trying to claim Joe Burrow. Give me a break.
You need to find a new NFL team, and you need to find a new college team. There's no doubt about that. All right, prediction number 5. Took care of the quarterback today. Record-breaking deal to Jalen Hurts. $179 million guaranteed. $255 over 5 years. I do think the Eagles sitting in at number 10 will have Bijan Robinson on the board. And I do think the Eagles will end up taking Bijan Robinson. You know my philosophy. I do not usually like when teams draft a running back in the first round. But the exception is if you don't have many flaws on the roster. And I don't think the Eagles have many flaws on the roster. Even if it's just for 4 or 5 years and you never give them a second contract, you look at the window the Eagles have. You have a great offensive line. You just paid your quarterback. You have Devontae Smith. You also have your best wide receiver in A.J. Brown. You got Dallas Goedert, who's still criminally underrated as a tight end of the NFL. I think they add Bijan Robinson and continue to make that push for a Lombardi Trophy. My team, the Patriots. I don't know who, but after me wanting a wide receiver, after me wanting a tight end, now they just signed Gesicki, and you still have Hunter Henry there, but I would love Dalton Kincaid, and I do want them to draft a wide receiver. I think the Patriots, with their first round pick, I'll just give you the position, they end up taking a cornerback. Number 6. This has been a change for me, because if you would have asked me all throughout the last few months, I would say Will Anderson's the first defensive player off the board. I think where there's smoke, there's a fire. Tyree Wilson continues to just be jolting up the draft boards. I think Tyree Wilson is the first defensive player selected off the board. Prediction number 7. Are we at 7 right now? Did my counting go wrong here? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Oh, okay. Here we go. 8. It's actually 8. Young 1, Stroud 2. Richardson gets a trade up with the Raiders to 3. Will Levis 4. Bijan Robinson to the Eagles. Pats take a corner. And Tyree Wilson, first defensive player. Told you. Me, numbers, math, not that great. But we get to prediction number 8. Hickey, if I'm taking 4 quarterbacks in the first 4 picks, and even if I don't end up being right about that, 4 will go in the top 10. That means someone else is going to find their way into the first round. And if Hendon Hooker didn't get hurt, I really do believe he would have been a first round pick. I think some team in the 20s, like mid-20s, whether it's trading back into the first round or towards the end of the first round, you go find a way to get back in it, or you maybe move some spots back and a team swaps places with you. I do think Hendon Hooker is going to be a first-round pick, and we're going to see 5 quarterbacks go in the first round after Ryan. Last year, us being at the draft, and we only saw 1 quarterback go in the first round, and that was Kenny Pickett to the Steelers.
I would agree with you, especially with the ACL injury. If you want to get the fifth-year option and get an extra year, if he's not going to play half the year anyway, I'm with you. I think we'll see a team trade up, take him there, late 20s. He'll go in the first round.
Now, just a reminder, when Hendon Hooker joined us at the Super Bowl, and this was in Arizona, he said he believes he's the best quarterback in the draft. Now, I think you should say that if you are someone that has confidence and, you know, you're in top five, top six at your position. And also, he said his goal and the plan is to be ready for week one. Now, we'll see if he could do that. It's one thing to have that plan at the Super Bowl. We'll see how long he does recover from that ACL injury. All right, prediction number nine. The first tight end in what is being called one of the deepest tight end draft classes we have ever seen. I do think it's going to be Dalton Kincaid out of Utah. I know a lot of people love Michael Mayer out of Notre Dame. I almost called him Matt Mayer, which you did once, and that's one of our good mutual friends that not many people know. But I do think Mayer is going to go, is going to be the second tight end off the board, and I do think that we're going to see Dalton Kincaid be the first tight end off the board in this draft class. Hickey.
I'm still going to go Michael Mayer. I think he'll be the first one.
Okay. And finally, I don't know if this is going to be a bold prediction here. I would have never said this a week ago, but the fact that he didn't get an invite to the NFL draft green room makes me think that he's falling. And I think the guy has tremendous potential in the NFL, and I love what he did this past year. I'm going to say Quentin Johnson doesn't go in the first round. There's always one name that's a stunner, and I forget whose mock draft I was reading. It was on CBS Sports. They had him falling 31 because there's not a 32nd pick this year in the first round because of the Dolphins getting a pick taken away, and they had him fall all the way to 31 to Kansas City. I was like, wow, maybe this player is going to fall out of the first round altogether. I think Quentin Johnson's going to fall out of the first round. Not that he should, but that's one of what I thought was a bold prediction for the first round, Hickey.
And I get it just because there are injury concerns. Like at TCU, for how great he was, like in one sense, it's, wow, he's a really great receiver, really talented, big, physical. But in the other sense, I mean, every game he's doing something. Every game I feel like he was questionable to play, missed a few as well. Like it was, as much of his talent he was, it was also injury questions all year long.
And remember, wide receiver's been a popular position. It's had a lot of success the last 3 years or so. It seems like Jackson Smith and Jigba will be the first receiver taken in the draft. After that, a lot of love's been showing the way to Zay Flowers out of BC. Addison out of USC, and who was at Pitt the year before, has been talked about a lot. Like, you're not really hearing about a lot of these wide receivers. So we may not have as many wide receivers as you think, just because we've kind of been accustomed to so many going in the first round with the success of the position for rookies the last few years. So the 10 predictions one more time. Young 1, Stroud 2, Richardson trade up to 3, Will Levis 4, Bijan Robinson of the Eagles, Pats take a corner, Tyree Wilson, first defensive player off the board, Hendon Hooker goes in the first round, Dalton Kincaid, first round tight end, and Quentin Johnson will not go in the first round.
Surgeons keep our hearts beating. They do the amazing, help save lives, and so can you. Your CSL plasma donation can help create 24 critical life-saving medicines that can give grandpa the chance for his heart to swell when he meets his new grandson, or give a bride the chance for her heart to skip a beat on her wedding day. Every plasma donation helps more than you know. Do the amazing. Help save lives. Donate today at your local CSL plasma center and be rewarded for your generosity.